Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and like every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Good evening, Carlos. I'm excited to be here. Carlos, here we are 30 days after the end of the Ryder Cup at Glen Eagles, and the PGA of America and Ted Bishop are still dominating the news. We're going to cover every angle of the Ted Bishop debacle in our practice range discussion tonight. I don't think 60 minutes is enough. I can talk for days about this stuff. Let's go.
We've been talking for 30 days already. When is this going to end? But, hey, we've got a lot to talk about. And we have also a very important guest of the week. Our VIG will be PGA Pro Mike Fay. So don't miss it. It's going to be very interesting. Hey, we're going to start with the Par 5 news, and today, this week, I'm going to take the tee shot. Last week, I finished with
keep in the fairway, keep in the fairway. I don't like to play from the rough
here. I'm trying. I hope it doesn't hook, so we'll see. So last week, I finished with some news about Rory McIlroy, and we'll expand on it now. So last week, he said in a statement that mediation in a lawsuit with his former management company failed over the weekend, and will skip his next two tournaments in China because he needs time to prepare for the trial. Rory has been involved in an acrimonious dispute with the Dublin-based Horizon Sports Management. He left Horizon in the spring of 2013, about 6 months after signing a lucrative contract with Nike. Both groups have sued each other, and McIlroy's attorneys have sought evidence that GMAC was getting a better deal from Horizon. The judge recommended mediation to keep sensitive documents from going public, but that failed over the weekend, and now the trial is expected to begin in February. McIlroy is not expected to play until the DP World Tour Dubai in November 22 to 23rd. He also plans to defend his title in the Australian Open, which could be his final tournament of the year. He will not play the BMW Masters, which starts Thursday at Lake Malaren, or the following week at the HSBC Champions. Those are the opening two events in the final series of the Race to Dubai on the European Tour. The HSBC Champions is a WGC event. His absence from the BMW Masters at Lake Malaren in Shanghai, as well as the WGC HSBC Champions starting November 3rd at Shenzhen, will hit the European Tour hard, as well as the Chinese golf this next 2 weeks. Although he has led for more than 2 million euros right now in the Race to Dubai, mathematically he's not locked in to win it. This announcement means that one of the pursuers, such as Sergio Garcia or Henrik Stenson, could conceivably, although unlikely, catch him in the order of merit race. One thing could help him is that both Sergio and Stenson also took off this week's BMW Masters. The last and only time a world number one has sidelined himself for anything other than fitness reasons was Tiger Woods 5 years ago, and you'll remember what happened there, that famous scandal. Another number one that is taking some time off is our colleague, Kieran Clark, so I'm sending him, you know, he's a world number one European guru, so he's taking some time off. So, hey, Tiger took some time off. Kieran takes some time off. Hey, he can take some time off already, too. His fallout should not begin to reach those depths. McIlroy won the British Open, the WGC, and the PGA Championship in consecutive starts, which enabled him to win the PGA Tour Player of the Year for the second time in 3 seasons. He also won the Ryder Trophy and the PGA Tour Money title. But the very fact that Rory, who won the last 2 majors of the season, could reestablish himself as golf's indisputed best, is already focused on his appearance on the stand in a Dublin court early next year will cause fears that it could affect his bid for the Masters, which starts on April 9 at Augusta, where he will attempt to become just the 6th player in history to win the career Grand Slam. This will be a true test on Roy's mental toughness moving forward. This case has the makings of a big-time bomb that could explode with all the parts around it getting hit on all flanks. Fred, if he's able to overcome this and continue his dominant ways, we will be in for a long trade with him that will rival that of Tiger and Jack.
Well, actually, Carlos, I'm a little more concerned about you mentioning Rory McIlroy and Kieran Clark in the same story. I hope Rory doesn't sue us over that. Okay.
And it's been recorded.
Let's talk. Carlos, we certainly do not want to be seen as sexist at the Back Nine Report. We are huge supporters of the LPGA and women in golf in general. I want to report on some great work being done by Billy Casper Golf to increase the number of women being brought to the game by that network. The social network organization Women on Course has grown over 400% since being acquired by Billy Casper Golf just 12 months ago. 20,000 women have enjoyed golf, lunch, happy hour, and wine spa activity. Probably the wine and spa activity more than the golf. But in cities like Atlanta, Boston, Chicago, Dallas, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, all around the United States, they've had play days, signature and destination gatherings highlight the programming. And, you know, corporations that have jumped on board, Wells Fargo, Merrill Lynch, Golfsmith, and Accenture have promoted women on course corporate memberships, employee development programs, and event sponsorship. So Women on Course provides access for golfers of all skill levels to connect in fun and unintimidating environments. So they're just looking to have a good time, help women to connect, and get them out on the golf course. Membership dues are affordable. Even if you buy a membership, you even get some good swag stuff back. So, you know, special access to private clubs, discounts on green fees, apparel, equipment, and other products, golf and educational resources, contests, just a whole bunch of stuff. Billy Casper Golf is committed to growing female participation. Women on Course has the perfect recipe to introduce the golf lifestyle and its many wellness and career benefits. For women, women comprise one-third of all new golfers that join, you know, the game of golf. So it only makes sense to try and make it more fun and enjoyable for them. They can kind of make up their own rules, you know, have it their own way, play as they want. And it's just all about enhancing their golf skills, etiquette, maybe advancing their career through the connections they make. So it has a wide-ranging effect and benefits for the women that participate in the program. So hats off to Billy Casper Golf for trying to expand the golf experience and include women and get them involved.
Kudos to him, and hopefully that keeps growing and growing. Anything that's up for growing golf, we have to be all for it. Hey, Fred, let's talk a little bit about somebody that doesn't speak a lot. That's Ian Poulter.
Yeah, right.
His autobiography called No Limits went on sale last Thursday, and as you can expect from someone who is outspoken and free-spirited, you might have thought that we were back on the 4th of July with all the fireworks surrounding that release. The autobiography of this golfer, whose picture might be besides the word intensity in the dictionary, is his usual mix of comedy and controversy, but hey, he's still a man you'd like to go for a pint with. Poulter's book supplies background and family insight, which was not being offered before. It is also an accurate portrayal of his character, someone who has emerged from genuinely humble beginnings to mix it with the world's best, creating more than a few headlines along the way. Where Poulter came from shapes so much of what he stands for and appreciates now. To his credit, Poulter is open about his clashes in the past, most notably with Colin Montgomery, but doesn't seem the type to bear a grudge at all. He says, and I quote, "I do rub some people up the wrong way, but people around me know that there are no lies and no BS." And BS was the full word. We cannot say it here. Poulter has that admirable ability to deal with what is in front of him in life and move on while retaining that clear perspective. He talks about his supposed spat with Tiger Woods, to which he says, unfortunately for a lot of people here, there is no needle between him and Tiger in any way, shape, or form. And he also talks about the fallout of Tom Watson in the Ryder Cup. But the most interesting one, he slammed Nick Faldo for calling Sergio Garcia useless during the Ryder Cup and claimed he has lost the respect of Europe's top golfers. Poulter revealed the home locker room was fuming about the remark and said Faldo had gone from being his hero to zero. He accused him of sour grapes and being embittered because he's the only losing European Ryder Cup captain this century. So, hey, Ian James Poulter might be accused of being outspoken, intense, but one thing he cannot be accused is of seeking to cash in on short-term success. That publication of his autobiography last week, after all, comes toward the end of what the charismatic Englishman admits is his worst year as a professional. There's a simple explanation for that, of course. Poulter suffered three separate injuries before playing an influential role in another European Ryder Cup success, meaning longevity is his password when looking towards the future. The confirming of a new equipment deal with Titleist may well offer Poulter fresh impetus before 2015 is out. He looks towards Lee Westwood, who recently played in his 10th Ryder Cup at the age of 42, and Miguel Angel Jimenez for wider inspiration. Hey, Fred, one thing's for sure. Were you to have a pint with Poulter, hey, he's guaranteed to be a very engaging company.
And he'll be colorful doing it.
So, oh, yeah, he will. Very colorful.
Wisconsin golf is probably most known for the American Club, Whistling Straits, and Herb Kohler's golf facilities there around Sheboygan, Wisconsin, just north of Milwaukee a little ways. But if all goes according to Mike Kaiser's plan, someday there will be five courses and lodging on 1,500 acres a few miles south of Wisconsin Rapids. It's in an area of depressed Adams County, so they could really use the help there and the jobs that would provide. Bill Corr and Ben Crenshaw, who are widely praised for their minimalist and imaginative designs, have routed the first course at Sand Valley, and they're beginning to build that there. A lot of trees have been harvested, revealing a wonderful sand barren, a prairie-like habitat that once formed the bed of a massive prehistoric lake. The sand is 100 to 200 feet deep. And winds over the years have moved the sand and created towering dunes and ridges. It sounds like it's going to be a beautiful property and just perfect for building golf courses on. It's a stunning and visual landscape, said Kaiser, who, of course, Mike Kaiser Jr., his father, Mike Kaiser Sr., built Bandon Dunes, of course, on the Oregon coast. And they're also building the courses up in Newfoundland. It's as calming and as inspiring as an ocean. It's endless. A small group of founding members paid $50,000 each for lifetime playing privileges at the proposed five courses. The Corr Crenshaw course is in its infancy and probably won't open until 2017. But it's just not hard, if you walk the property, to imagine some rolling fairways that run over the dunes and greens perched atop exposed ridges. So it should be really a fabulous place. The Kaiser family was hesitant about the site originally because it lacked an ocean or a large body of water. And they said that for them that to build a brilliant golf course, they felt they needed a brilliant architect, a sandy site, and an ocean. Well, they didn't have the ocean there. But when they got people in there to look at that piece of property, they came back and said, you know, you have an ocean of sand and prairie and wildflowers. And once they realized how unique that is, they understood that they could build a really fabulous facility there. So we're very deliberate, and we're just focusing on making the first course as good as we can make it, because we know if the first one doesn't exceed your expectations, there won't be a second one. So, Sand Valley is something to look forward to in there in Wisconsin. You've got all the great golf around Chicago. You can go up Lake Michigan coastline to Sheboygan and play the Kohler properties there at Whistling Straits and the other courses there. And he's talking about building another Pete Dye course also. And then you can go over towards the middle of the state and play these new Sand Valley courses when they get down here in a few years. So a lot of good golf coming to Wisconsin in the near future, Carlos.
Hey, there's no second chance for a first impression. So if that first course is anything like Bandon Dunes, hey, that's going to be one heck of a first impression. Hey, Fred, you know, Lou Holtz, the Hall of Fame retired college football coach, once said, "Show me someone who has done something worthwhile. I'll show you someone who has overcome adversity." Well, Gerald Inslee of the Tallahassee Democrat published last week the fascinating adversity overcoming story of Kamayu Johnson, a 21-year-old golfer whose USGA handicap index is an eye-popping +5. Johnson could have wound up like some 13-year-old fatherless kids do when they don't like school and get mixed up with the wrong crowd. But two people, Tallahassee Municipal Golf Course Superintendent Jan Alger and former high school athletic star Hans Sykes, steered him in the right direction. As Inslee points out in his article, the road to success has been without a few proverbial bumps and flat tires, but Johnson's story is definitely worth the read, especially since he's just now rising to prominence beyond his home territory. He had all the red flags. He was a fatherless black kid, a grade dropout, broken home, running with the wrong crowd. But instead, Kamayu Johnson stumbled onto golf, where he found he had talent, where he discovered mentors, where he found direction, purpose, and now a calling. Johnson made his first tournament start as a professional in the two-day Jim Lee Open this past weekend at the Capital City Country Club in Tallahassee. He finished third out of 20 entrants. He shot 68 and 74 and won $200. Hey, regardless of how he played or how much he earned this past weekend, we hope that Kamayu Johnson continues to write an increasingly successful story with his life and forces other kids in tough living situations to take a fresh look at the game we all love. So kudos to him. Hopefully he can keep going and inspiring more and more kids.
Hey, Carlos, that's a really good story. I saw that the other day, read through it, watched a little video they had, and really pulling for him. Hope things work out really well for him. Carlos, there is nothing better after a long, hot day on the golf course than a cold beer. We all know that, right? Beer and golf have gone together for centuries. Some even support the idea that golf was invented solely as a reason to drink beer outdoors. Well, golf and beer are forging a new partnership. Graham McDowell, Keegan Bradley, and Freddie Jacobson announced the formation of Golf Beer Brewing Company. Professional golfers in the beer business, what can go wrong with that? Each will have his own signature beer in the golf beer lineup. Graham McDowell will have the Celtic-style pale ale. Keegan Bradley, New England-style lager. And Freddie Jacques, Scandinavian-style blonde ale. Imagine sitting down at the 19th hole and telling the bartender, "Give me some of that GMAC pale ale. Makes me thirsty right now. How about you, Carlos?" Appears these boys are looking ahead to retirement days when they can't make putts or find the fairways. I guess it's true what they say. It's never too early to start planning for retirement. Carlos, that wraps up the news, the par five news for the week. I think we've covered it all. We even got beer in the news. How about that?
Let's go have a cold one now.
I'm ready.
Let's have a break and let's have a cold one. Hey, like you said, that wraps up our Part 5 news. Let's take a short break. When we come back, we have our VIG Drink Pushing guest, and that's Mike Fay. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG, the very important guest of the week. The interview will be with Mike Fay. He's a 17-year PGA Class A professional from Michigan, and he's also the host of the very successful and fully interactive Twitter show, Ask the Pro. Fred, set this interview for us.
Well, yeah, Carlos, Mike is a good friend of the show. We've had him on Back Nine Report one other time. And we're just happy to have him back. His Ask a Pro segment has been recognized with several awards. He does, in addition to being the director of player development at the Boyne Properties in Michigan, he goes to Florida every winter and conducts clinics down there at PGA Village. And he's just a pro's pro, very knowledgeable, and we were glad to have a chance to talk to him again. So. Go ahead and run the tape, Carlos.
Let's play it.
We are here with Mike Fay, PGA professional, who is the director of player performance at the Boring Mountain Golf Resort in Michigan. He's been a PGA professional for 17 years. And, Mike, I know you were at a Michigan sectional PGA meeting for most of the day, and we had the big news over the weekend of the Ted Bishop dismissal. I'm sure there was a little bit of talk about how that went down, and what's kind of the feelings of the rank and file PGA professionals on the happenings there in the head office of the PGA?
It's definitely not happy. It's pretty much a downer, you know, guys. It just really goes to show you, you know, I'm highly involved in social media like you guys are, and it just, you know, anything that you put out there is you. And that's the way you're perceived, no matter what. And it's just tough. You have to be careful with what you say out there. And just more shocked than anything right now. It's pretty fresh. You know, it's just a tough time. Really tough time. We're pretty saddened by the whole thing.
Yeah, it seems kind of bizarre, actually. There was a great article in Global Golf Post written by Steve Eubanks, and he says, "What's a guy of Ted Bishop's age talking smack and doing that kind of thing on Twitter, anyhow, with a PGA professional, a touring professional?" So, yeah, it's just kind of bizarre. Hey, on to a better note. I know. As director of player development there at Boyne Mountain, you have been promoting a holistic approach to improving player performance, just not the X's and O's of fixing a swing or grip, stance, ball position. You're looking at a lot of things to improve a golfer's performance.
Absolutely. We look at everything from TrackMan numbers to, you know, what your body can and cannot do with golf fitness, and evaluating our players, no matter how old they are, to make them better and getting them to realize that if we can't get them to move in the way that we want them to move, hit the ball better, whether it's, you know, you want to hit the ball farther or straighter or more solid or whatever it is that we need to improve to make your scores better, golf fitness definitely plays a part of that. And that's what we've been doing at Boyne. Putting together with the Boyne Golf Academy, different programs. We've hired a director of golf fitness at Boyne who's in charge of, you know, helping our players reach their goals and attain them and really working on that part of your game. And we've had some awesome results. Players breaking score barriers all year long, and since we put this initiative in, and all of us are trained in TPI some of us in our director of fitness and NG360 and much more than that to really have the knowledge and know how to really help our players get better. And then, you know, watch them progress as they get better, too, and get stronger and more fit. And, you know, it's different than just going in and working out, you know, you guys. It's being able to move the golf club in a stronger position and keep it there, it's tough. And the better we do it, we know that now from the guys on the tour. We have such good knowledge now. Been passed down. It's good stuff. Really good.
You mentioned TPI. That's the Titleist Performance Institute, training methods, fitness initiatives, those kind of things, correct?
That's right. Yep. TPI is great.
So not only are you using TrackMan, you're using video analysis, you're doing the X and the O's and getting people out there hitting golf balls, you got to spend some time in the gym, in your stretching, in your core fitness, and making so your body can get into the positions it needs to get into to make correct swing.
Exactly. I mean, I learned a long time ago. You know, I've been teaching golf for over 20 years now, and, you know, probably well over 10 years ago when Tiger came on the scene, I learned that it got to the point with a lot of my players that they just could not physically do what I asked of them. I wasn't trying to make them swing like Tiger Woods, but if you can't turn your shoulders or you can't hold the golf club in a certain position based upon your body just isn't strong enough or not flexible enough or things like that, it just makes it harder to learn golf. And, you know, I think that since I've been doing this and Boyne has been bringing that to more people, it's been paying off like no other. It's good stuff. And it's for the common golfer. It's not for the extra golfer. It's for everyone. That's good stuff.
I know. Tell me, how did the season go up there for Boyne? I know it was a long winter. It didn't warm up till late, so it was kind of a short season, but it was pretty nice summer, wasn't it?
Yes, it was a pretty nice summer. At the end there, we had a bunch of rain, but all in all, it was a really late start. I know that a lot of the golf courses around the Detroit area really took a beating with their greens because of, you know, losing their greens and things like that. We didn't have that. I think we had so much snow covering our grass up north here that we weren't in danger of having that kind of stuff happen like around Detroit. But it did get to be a late start, but we finished strong. It's good stuff, and looking forward to next year.
Now, you mentioned, you know, you do a lot of stuff on Facebook and Twitter, you have your Ask the Pro program. Talk a little bit about that, and how can our listeners become involved in that?
Sure. The Ask the Pro show started in March of 2011, and I am the host of the show, and people send me questions through a variety of ways. Most of them send them through the website, but you can send it through Facebook, email, just getting a hold of me. And what I do is I send questions out to some of the best golf minds in the world, and all at the same time on Sunday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern time. We help people play better golf, and it's good stuff. We've had some pretty famous people on there. We've had some very, what I consider, great golf instructors that you may never have heard of. We've got top 100 and top 50 teachers in Golf Digest and Golf Magazine, and it's all good stuff. We all get together for a good cause and help people play better. So just about every Sunday night we do that, and it's pretty neat on Twitter because it breaks off conversations and people get involved and just give them the help. And, it, you know, it's tough. The people that helped me help these people with the 140 characters and trying to give them an idea of what to work on, it's tough on Twitter, but it gets done. It's a really, really good show. It's really good.
I know you've been recognized. You've won some awards for that, and I want to congratulate you with that.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, it's good stuff. I enjoy it. I enjoy, you know, every week seeing all the questions coming in and you know, all the support that I've had. I'm honored that everyone wants to participate. We just don't send the questions out. There are some periods of time during the show where I get the entire audience involved in certain questions where, you know, they would be more of a general question out to anyone, which is pretty neat to see the responses, you know. For instance, like a couple of weeks back, someone was asking about a golf mat. What is the best golf mat to buy? What's a really good one and why? You know, so the golf questions, it's not just about instruction. It's about anything in golf, which is pretty cool.
Now, we're getting dangerously close to November here, and Northern Michigan golf course has become covered with kind of a white blanket of snow up there. So skis and snowboards are much more prevalent up around here than golf clubs this time of year. So I believe you spent some time in Florida, and golfers can kind of work one-on-one with you on your game and some clinics that you hold down at PGA Village in Port St. Lucie, if that's not correct.
That's right, yeah. We have a little theme going here at Boyne called Golf Never Stops at Boyne. We realize that golf needs to keep going in order to get better. You can't just put the clubs down in November and pick them up in May. So we put together some golf schools down at PGA Village that run from November through April. And it's good stuff. We've had some good success with it. We also have indoor facility up at Boyne Highlands that we use to coach players throughout the winter. And, the Florida golf trips with us guys, it's very highly specialized stuff. It's not big, large groups of people. It's instructor-teacher ratios 3-1. We bring the track man down there and video, and we do golf fitness while we're down in Florida. And not only just a great golf getaway, but, our students that already come to us really enjoy that time they have with us down at PGA Village, and it's a world-class place to learn golf and have fun, and it's good stuff. Plus, we get to play golf in the afternoon with everyone, which is really cool, too.
Yeah, and there's a little course there called the Pete Dye Course. It's not too snotty, and the golf facility there, the training facility, is just it's first class. There's nothing any better like it anywhere in the world. It really is a top-shelf operation there.
Yeah, I don't know if I've seen a bigger one, It's like, 35 acres. It's huge, and, we can hit balls at night if we want. It is spectacular. 7 different types of sand, and then, the 3 golf courses right there, the Village plus the Country Club, if we want to play over there. It's good stuff. Really good.
Carlos, that's the list of questions that I have. Did you want to have Mike answer anything there?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned earlier that you're using TrackMan in your program. And, the one good thing that a lot of people at least ask me is, this is a too much like a technical thing, and they mm-hmm. don't understand it. So how, I remember once that reading about Sean Foley and a friend, and when Sean Foley was behind Tiger Woods in the U.S. Open, he received an mm-hmm. email from Justin Rose with a bunch of numbers and all that, and the friend said, "Hey, that looks like hieroglyphics to me. So what is that?" And then he explained what it was, and he said, "Well, that's too technical." Do you think that is it that way, or does it really, is it helping your program to help more your students?
I've always thought, and I think it's very important for my players to understand why they're doing what they're doing and how to fix their problems themselves. If I can, that's like the greatest gift I could give them. If I can show them why they're doing what they're doing. And that's what TrackMan's all about. TrackMan's, I use those numbers to show them not only progress, but why it's happening. We never really had anything like this until TrackMan came along. Being able to work on angle of attack and things like that change ball flight so dramatically. It's pretty cool stuff. And not only that, for instance, I was working with an older gentleman. He was hitting his driver 100 yards in the air. Okay, and he said, "Mike, I just can't, I have to hit the ball farther. Even if I gave him another 25 yards, he might be able to get to some par fours and two, even from all the way up tees." So we started working on it, and we found out a few things that, you know, club face was a little bit closed, and where the path was a little bit off, and we started to change it, and we cut his mistakes in about half. And the gentleman gained almost 50 yards. I mean, that changes his game dramatically now. And he can play better and score better and have more fun and, you know, lower his handicap a bit and things like that. So it's not just for the tour player. It's for everyone. And when we explain it and put it into a way that you guys can understand what it spits out and how it relates to you, it's just another great tool for us to coach with. It's really good stuff. Really good.
Oh, most definitely. I just remember Sean Foley's response. He said to a friend, you know, it's technical if you do not understand TrackMan. If you understand it, then it simplifies things. So basically that's what you're saying. It does help simplify things for people to get better.
Yeah, you have to make it easy. You know, and you know, I go around giving talks on TrackMan. All around Michigan and that, and give speeches on why your golf ball flies the way it flies. You know, and I think there's a stigma, too. You're right. People think, oh, gosh, you know, oh, I don't want to, they're uncomfortable and stuff with all this technology and that. But once you put in the layman's terms and show them, you know, what it really means to them, then they can go for it and try and get to those numbers, those optimal numbers that make them better. And that's when it's fun. You know, let's pull out the TrackMan today. Let's see how we're doing this week. Let's see if we can get better. You know, when you're whacking balls on the range, you don't know. Ball just goes out there. You might see it land over there by the flag or whatever, but you don't know what those numbers are and how far you're hitting the ball necessarily. So it's good stuff. Really good.
Thank you. Thank you for the answer. Fred, that's all I have.
Mike, unless you have something else, I think that wraps up what I had, the questions I had. So we really appreciate you taking time and talking to us again. And we want to keep you coming back on the show. We always appreciate your input and insight into teaching golf.
Well, thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
All right, Mike, you take care, and we'll be talking to you. And that wraps this up. So thank you, Mike.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Best of success to you.
Bye.
There you have it. That was Mike Fay, 17-year PGA Class A professional from Michigan, and the host of the Twitter show Ask the Pro. Fred, great interview again. Very insightful. So what do you think?
Yeah, Mike does a great job. He is recognized as one of the best teachers by the PGA in the United States. And PGA Village, if anybody's looking to plan a winter trip, PGA Village is down at Port St. Lucie, which is about half an hour north of West Palm Beach. So it's far enough down in Florida you get that warm weather even in January and February. It's a great place to go. As he mentioned, the practice facility there is second to none. It's 30-plus acres. They have seven different kinds of bunkers with sand in it. So no matter what kind of sand is on your golf course, there's a bunker there to practice out of. They've got chipping golf courses. They got pitching golf courses. They got, short game, full swing. They have a little par three there to work on. I mean, just everything you can think of in that practice facility to hone your game and work on it over the winter. And, of course, if you go when Mike is there, I think he goes about 1 week a month over the winter. You can line up a trip and go down and work with him and maybe improve your game. And besides the practice facility, there's three golf courses. There's the Ryder and the Wanamaker, two 18-hole championship courses, and then on top of that is the Pete Dye, which is a really a nice golf course. You will not be disappointed playing that golf course, I guarantee it. Mike can be reached at Mike Fay Golf on Twitter, and also just type in Mike Fay, F-A-Y, on Facebook. You can find him. So I'm sure he'd be happy to get you lined up for one of his clinics down there or a session, and if you want to go down in Florida and play golf this winter.
And his website is MikeFayGolf.com, so you can see it there, all the trainings, all the aids. He's there, Mike Fay, MikeFayGolf.com. So that wraps up our VIG, very important guest of the week section. Don't go away. When we come back, we're going to start talking about Ted Bishop. Don't go away.
Who's he?
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our practice range section. We're going to go to the practice range and take our shots on the theme of the week. And the theme of the week is about somebody, like you said, who is he? Well, Ted Bishop. You know, so Ted Bishop spent all day today trying to salvage whatever was left of his legacy as the 38th president of the PGA of America. That he was even talking about a legacy is part of what got him into this mess in the first place. You know, can anyone mention or think of the legacy left by any of the 37 presidents that preceded him? And for those who are not deeply vested in the golf industry, does anyone even remember who was the last president of the PGA of America before him? The PGA of America has the most important role in golf, just not only the most glamorous. It has more than 27,000 men and women who rightfully claim to be recognized experts in pitching and growing the game. It runs the PGA Championship once a year, the Ryder Cup every 4 years. Celebrity is found on the PGA Tour, which split from the PGA of America nearly 50 years ago behind Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer. Bishop was more about celebrity. This is one PGA president people will remember, just not the way he wanted. Those comments directed at Ian Poulter on Twitter, he called him a little girl, and in Facebook, a post that he sounded like a little girl squealing during recess, marked an unceremonious end to 23 months of Bishop bringing too much attention to himself. The potential for that was even before he began his two-year term. Bishop is exceptional as a public speaker, which makes it easy to be seduced by the spotlight. Let's give one fact. He was the first to oppose the new rule that bans the anchored stroke used for long putters, but he didn't stop there. In a series of interviews and emails with Golf World magazine in April, he took on the RNA and Chief Executive Peter Dawson for not accepting input, and then he poked the RNA by showing evidence of not being inclusive was their unwillingness to accept women as members. Result, the RNA voted to accept female members in September. Another fact. Bishop also floated the idea of taking the PGA Championship overseas, even mentioning as a possibility Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland, which was clamoring for a British Open. The result? Royal Portrush is now on the Open rotation. Another fact, he also took a risk by appointing Tom Watson as the Ryder Cup captain, even though Watson had not been a Ryder Cup captain since he was last time in 1993. The result, the move backfired when Watson made a series of dubious decisions with his picks and his lineups, and then the choice was exposed when Phil Mickelson, with Watson in the room, talked in a press conference about how America had strayed from its win formula and think Lucifer's. And when the Americans lost and Watson was criticized, Bishop took it personally. That's why he couldn't resist firing back at Poulter, who in his recently published book mentioned Watson's shortcomings. Poulter also called out Nick Faldo for referring to Sergio Garcia as useless in 2008 when Faldo was captain and you have lost for the only time in the last 15 years. Bishop blamed no one but himself. He did spare the PGA of America officers in this 24-hour news cycle tour that led to what he calls his impeachment. Bishop said he wanted to apologize, and instead he signed off a statement that only mentioned he had removed the inappropriate post. He even said that Dottie Pepper, an independent director for the PGA and no stranger to controversy, urged him to get out in front of the story with an apology. This one time, Bishop decided to toe the line, and it cost him. Bishop was on the verge of choking up at the end of his Golf Channel appearance today, and only, well, I can say one thing. He was right about one thing. He has no one else to blame but himself for it.
Yeah, that's true, Carlos. And I can't, you know, there's no question about that. You're exactly correct. But I just can't help but think that the punishment far overshadows the crime in this case. Late last week, the PGA of America did impeach Ted Bishop for comments he made on Twitter and Facebook. The PGA, along with the USGA, are the keepers of golf in the United States. And they take their role very seriously, maybe even too much so. They are typical bureaucratic institutions with rigid rules and procedures. One does not dare to be seen in public without one's sports coat or tan pants even. Bureaucrats do not like lone wolves or outspoken presidents. Ted Bishop assumed the presidency of the 27,000-member PGA after being a PGA professional for many years and had served in various capacities inside the organization. You just don't get to the top of the PGA of America without doing your due diligence and serving time, working on the committees and working your way up through all the jobs. With Ted Bishop as its president, it presided over several major issues in golf over the past 2 years, and you talked about a few of them, but three really big ones was the anchored putter issue, and Bishop was right out front of the PGA, and citing that, you know, this would be a bad thing for the average golfer and stood up for the rank-and-file PGA professionals that it would hurt their game and maybe not be a good thing. They were unsuccessful, but he was right there at least making the effort, which many of us, like myself, applauded. The PGA assumed a major role in the drive, chip, and putt competition sponsored by Augusta National, and they could conduct all of the qualifying tournaments for boys and girls around the country. It was Ted Bishop, along with PGA of America CEO Pete Bavacqua, on the stage with the LPGA Tour Commissioner Michael Wan and the president of KPMG when the new KPMG Women's PGA Championship was announced to the public with the largest purse ever that will be offered in women's golf. Ted Bishop, Carlos, is not a sexist. He's 60 years old and has a much different view of the world than the normal Twitter or Facebook user. He has two daughters that are actively involved in the golf industry and is a grandfather that understands the differences between boys and girls. When he was growing up, he heard things like, "Be a man, don't act like a little girl, and you're throwing like a girl." I'm sure he even admonishes his grandchildren with the same style of tough love when he's trying to teach them a certain skill or sport. It's not meant to be sexist or demeaning in any way. It's simply what he learned when he was a child. Social media makes the world a much different place than small-town Indiana where Bishop hails from. The gender gap does exist and is most noticeable in everyday conversations on social media outlets. The comments he made on Twitter and Facebook aimed at Ian Poulter were wrong, especially by today's politically correct standards. They were never meant to be sexist or blown completely out of proportion by some oversensitive media types. He did admit on Golf Channel's Morning Drive this morning that he was wrong, and he is completely off both Twitter and Facebook for good. You know, Carlos, maybe we could all learn a valuable lesson from Mr. Bishop pertaining to the correct usage of social media. Think twice, hit send once, or better yet, not at all.
Well, he sent he sent it twice. He did it on Twitter and Facebook. But
I know.
Well, I can understand that. You know, the little girl, the sexiest thing, and all that. And it doesn't mean to be derogatory or put down, but it sounds like it. Especially when a person is in that kind of position, he should know better. We hold those persons to a higher standard, and that's why we hope that everything that they're going to be saying, like I mentioned, this is more like, he was more like a celebrity, you know, the great speaker, the great persona and all that. So you are held to that standard, and he didn't live to it with that comment. I could understand, yes, okay, we can burst out, and for some reason, it might have been, he might have taken it personal that Ian Poulter said that, right? But if you take anything personal from Ian Poulter, hey, he says things out, he's outspoken. You know, you just could have done the high road and have no further comment on him. But to me, when you have those kind of positions, you're held to a higher standard, and those things are certainly not acceptable.
You know what? He's wrong. He admitted he's wrong. He said it, he shouldn't have done it, no question about it. But is it worthy of being stripped of past president status, no honorary past president status? You're not going to be recognized at any future PGA event. Just for all the work that he's put in over the years and all the good things he did this year, and be completely persona non grata with the PGA, that just seems completely wrong to me, Carlos. I just can't accept it. I know he'll go on. He'll be fine. He has his golf course. Somebody's going to pick him up to do some things because he's a sharp guy. He's a high-profile kind of guy. So somebody will pay him to do something. If nothing else, it'll be in the media or something, golf media or whatever. But I think the PGA is wrong here. And I'm going to leave you with one thing, Carlos. Nobody's talking about it, but when Mike Davis became the executive director of the USGA in 2011 after the retirement of David Fay, Pete Bevacqua had come up through the ranks there. He was kind of the fair-haired boy there. And he was in a bitter infighting with Mike Davis for that executive director spot. And after Davis took office, 2 weeks later, he resigned and left, kind of in a huff. Lo and behold, he ends up as CEO of the PGA a year or two later. But Bishop said this morning in his interview that he was most distraught about losing the friendship, not being able to talk with Peter Bevacqua and his assistant Derek Sprague on a daily basis. Sprague was announced the interim president to fill out the rest of the balance of Bishop's term. But you know what? I just can't almost – I mean, this thing happens so fast. It's such not a big issue to me. Maybe to other people it's way bigger than what I'm seeing. But, you know, it seems like as fast as they acted on this thing, it was almost like there was a palace coup. I don't know the reason. I don't know why. But I think there'll be more that will come out of this as the weeks go along, Carlos.
There will be, and certainly the Ryder Cup keeps popping up, like you mentioned, 30 days after. We're still talking about it, and especially because of Ian Poulter's book and his Sergio Faldo thing where he called him about his former hero to zero and defending Sergio and calling him Faldo, sour grapes and all that. Is this thing about the Ryder Cup ever going to end?
Well, I guess they need something to talk about right now. That's all I can tell you. They got to fill up the news.
I hope it doesn't. I hope it doesn't. So we can have something.
Hey, guys, I got two other real quick things. Real quick here. Suzanne Pedersen, defends this week at the LPGA Taiwan Championship, has not had a win this season. She's battled back injury. Is she going to win here and finish strong the last few weeks? And if you looked at the FedEx Cup points list so far this year, I know it's early. I know we're only three tournaments in, but listen to these names, Carlos. Robert Streb, Ben Martin, Sangmun Bae, Brendan DeYoung, Stephen Bowditch, Kevin Streelman, Will McKenzie, Tony Finau, Brooks Koepka, and Russell Knox. Those are your top 10 in the FedEx Cup points list right now. Now, I know we got some big tournaments coming in China here the next couple of weeks, and the big names are going to be playing. Matter of fact, there's a really good field this week and next week that will be playing. So we're going to get back to some serious golf on the PGA Tour and around the world. But, you know, my point of saying this is that, you know, last year we were saying the same thing when Jimmy Walker was leading the FedEx Cup, remember?
We certainly do. But to me, this kind of schedule still doesn't make sense when people – they have to do something because, I mean, this is a great opportunity for those players that really are not playing when the big guys are playing to take advantage, just like Jimmy Walker did. Look what it did for him. He ended up in the Ryder Cup and all that. So it's great, but to me it's like an off-season. Still feels like an off-season, so hopefully they can do something about it. And one thing that I want to mention that I had here to talk about a little bit is that for next year, okay, the McIlhenny Classic, one of these tournaments on this new final swing of the start of the year, if you can say that, the McIlhenny Classic will be the fourth PGA Tour event next year to use multiple courses, and the first that is not in California. You know, it's all about timing and opportunity, and the McIlhenny Classic next year will be the last official event in 2015, taking the spot now held by Mexico. But once daylight saving times arrives at the end of October, it's a scramble for even a 132-man field to finish. So the plan is to use the Seaside and Plantation courses at the Sea Island Golf Club. Not only will using both courses allow the rounds to finish with plenty of daylight, the field can be extended to 156 players at a time when, you know, the Web.com Tour graduates are trying to get a spot. Davis Love III, the tournament host, also expects a stronger field because it will not be the week on before or after Asian Swing. So, you know, the only one drawback would be the weather. It can get chilly there the week before Thanksgiving, especially on the water. So, hey, that's what I had about the McIlhenny Classic. Any final comments before we wrap up our show for this week?
That's a really good point about the McIlhenny adding the other course so they can add more players and bring in, you know, the younger guys, get the lesser-known Web.com Tour guys in there. That's really good. That's one of the things that, you know, the president, we talked to him at the Web.com at Fort Wayne, that they're working with the PGA Tour to get more spots for guys in earlier in the year. And also, one of the things, Carlos, we talk rivalries in golf. You got NB Park jumped back over to the number one spot in the Rolex rankings, knocking Stacey Lewis down. Stacey still leads in the money list, however. They're going to both be playing this week. So is the NB Park-Stacey Lewis the best rivalry in golf right now? Probably. But two more that I would really like to see and am watching and hoping will develop, Rory McIlroy and Ricky Fowler. We got to see a glimpse of that at the Ryder Cup. That was pretty good stuff. And, you know, Ricky played so well all year. He didn't get the wins, but he really played tough all year. And the other one that I think is developing is going to be going on for a long time back on the women's tour is the Liddy Ko, Lexi Thompson thing. What are some rivalries that you might like, Carlos?
You know, that's what he mentioned, one that really I like to see, and that's Ricky Fowler and Rory McIlroy. Definitely, I've been following them. I remember when they played at the Valero Open, the Crown Plaza, when Ricky Fowler won extra holes. You know, he just went for it. He likes to play there at the end group, the final group against Rory McIlroy. So definitely, that would be one. And in the women's world, of course, leading a call has to be won. Lexi, she'll be there. So, I mean, there's so many youngsters coming up right now. So any one of them could be. But right now, like you mentioned, I have to agree with you. Lexi Thompson looks like the one. Hey, that wraps up our show for this week. Thanks for joining us. Okay. It's always a pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG Very Important Guest of the Week, Mike Fay. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Block Talk Radio. And also, through TuneIn, if you haven't done so, follow the show. Also on Twitter,
ID Isatback 9 report with the number 9. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. Be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.